Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Electric Cars, this hour of the program today. The current issue of E, the environmental magazine, it has a cover story on charging ahead. The electric car revolution is coming. It's coming, but not fast enough. So we're going to be talking about the cars. Some of them are on the market right now, and what needs to happen in our society to ensure that many more people can drive electric cars, what it would mean for many more of us to drive electric cars. We'll have two guests with us during the course of the hour, starting with Bo Bennett, who is the creator and host of EVcast. It's a biweekly internet-based talk show on electric vehicles, actively involved in spreading the adoption of electric vehicles. Bo started the podcast in 2008, 400 episodes strong it is right now, and you can get much information, current information, about the electric vehicle industry there. Jim Matavalli will be joining us a little bit later. He wrote the piece that it's in the current issue of E, the environmental magazine, and he's going to be joining us by phone from Iceland, where they're having Iceland's an interesting place because they're on the grid because so many people live near the capital, and so they're having this electric car conference, and he will be with us from Iceland. Don't get too many of your guests from Iceland, do you? Here's our phone number. We get jammed with phone calls when we talk about this. So here's the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Bo.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent, thanks.
Good, glad to hear that. Electric car revolution is coming, so says this magazine. It's coming, but not quite fast enough. When will it be here? Is it slow in coming? And is it a big thing? Is it really coming?
Oh, it's huge. It's coming, and it's here. The revolution is here. It depends on how you define revolution, of course. If you define it in terms of people really starting to learn about the electric vehicle and realizing that, hey, these things are for real, then yes, it is here. There are many major companies, as you probably know, like General Motors and Nissan, that have jumped ahead and moved forward with electric vehicles. And we're going to be seeing those by the end of the year, which is pretty much amazing. People in our industry have been waiting for this for a very long time, and that time is finally here.
Why did you have to wait so long, Bo?
Well, The companies, the major companies, just weren't producing electric cars. They tried it back about 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. Actually, the electric vehicle had a long history, as you may or may not know. It started back in before the gas car, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Electric cars were all over the road. And then with the introduction of the gas engine, the automatic starter, the convenience of gas cars, and the ability to with the road system going from town to town, you couldn't use your little electric car. You needed something with a longer range. So the gas car basically won out, and that was back in the early 1900s. And then throughout the course of the history, there have been electric car here and there, nothing serious until about the end of the 90s when the California Air Resources Board made some new rules that basically said each manufacturer, if they're going to sell cars in California, they need to have a certain number of electric cars. And that caused a lot of the manufacturers, including General Motors, to produce these electric cars in pretty short order. I mean, they managed to get them out fairly quickly, but most of them didn't sell them. They just leased them. And soon
right.
as the auto companies were fighting with that because it was very expensive. It's a very expensive technology. It wasn't quite ready at the time, and it was just kind of a big mess. So eventually, a couple years later, the electric car virtually disappeared off the market.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many are we looking at just a car at this point, because we don't have technology to go further on this, that this is a niche market for people who live in cities or they live in communities where they're only driving 40 miles perhaps or 50 miles at the max to get to work and back?
Well, that's the wonderful thing. There are more options out.
There are.
Yeah, within the next few months, I would say, the American public has many different options to fit their needs. For example, if you want an electric car that could take you about 240 miles on a charge, and you have a little extra money to spend, go with the Tesla. The Tesla is an incredible sports car, that two-seater, that will take you, you know, 0 to 60 in, geez, I forgot what it is, like 6 seconds or
oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's fast. I forget exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But it's a really nice sports car. I mean, comparable to that of a Ferrari. It is expensive. That goes for about $109,000.
Oh, my.
But that has a very long range. The battery pack itself costs Tesla about $25,000, or at least that's what they say they sell it for,
mm-hmm.
like if you were to buy another one. So the batteries for that kind of range is very expensive. So what Nissan did, Nissan is coming out with the Leaf, and that's going to be available to consumers by the end of this year. They don't have as big of a battery pack. So that car will take you about 100 miles, which is still very good if you think about it, especially if you just keep plugging in every night in your garage. So if you go to work and your work is like 40 miles away, then you don't have to worry about it. You drive to work, you drive back, you plug in at night. In the morning, you can just keep on going. You never have to go to a Phillips station. But if you were, let's say, you commute and you have long distances, or every so often you have to drive a long distance, well, you may want to think about the Volt by General Motors, because that's called an EREV. Basically, that has a gas generator that will recharge the battery as you're going. So it's a pure electric car. It's still running on an electric motor, but the gas generator, you fill it up with gas just like you would your gas tank. You go the first 40 miles, and then once that electric battery is dead, the gas will kick over. So you could literally drive the Volt across country and not have to worry about it. You're just going to be driving on gas instead of battery.
Yeah. And what about these charging stations? Will you have to take care of this by yourself in the garage, or are we going to see more electric charging stations? Do we see them in certain cities in this country?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say, do you have to charge it by yourself? I would say, do you get to charge it by yourself?
All right.
That's a huge benefit. To be able just to go home. I mean, right now I have an electric scooter. It's called the Vectrix. It's a powerful scooter. It's more like a motorcycle scooter. It goes 60 miles per hour, two-seater. And I never, obviously being pure electric, never have to worry about filling up at a gas station, waiting in line, gassing up. Just whenever I'm done driving it, I just pull in the garage and I plug it in. And you just don't even worry about it. And they're coming out with a technology that we'll see very soon where you just pull your car into the garage over a mat, and the electricity will charge the car automatically without you having to plug anything in.
Oh.
So, I mean, you could get really lazy with this and enjoy it. I mean, that's what people like. People don't like to have to do things. And so, but to answer your question about the charging stations, right now in California, there are charging stations all over the place because that's kind of like the test market for the electric vehicles.
Hmm.
But once the Nissan Leaf really starts rolling out, we certainly will see charging stations in different areas more and more.
They sure have some beautiful television ads, that one of the polar bear.
Oh, geez.
Oh.
I cried like a baby.
Oh, did you really?
I love polar bears. I love animals.
I know. I love polar bears, too. It's very, very well done. And what about the technology? These things are still fairly new. There was some concern when we started getting hybrid cars that maybe they might have a few problems. We don't know about them yet. They haven't been on the road very long. Do you anticipate that there were some rough edges here?
Of course. With any new technology, you're going to run into that. If you're going to be an early adopter and you're going to be one of the first to get these electric vehicles, you're probably going to have to deal with a few bugs. But it's not, you know, I'm not anticipating the kind of bugs that makes the pedal stick and the accelerator stick. And you know, that's going to be dangerous to your life. I mean, I'm anticipating the battery levels. They may show something that it's really not. Just like computer adjustments to get everything to work smoothly.
Yes.
I mean, Nissan and General Motors especially, they are really pushing these things out. I know, you know, they're doing incredible testing and extensive testing, but whenever you launch any kind of product, the real testing is done once it's in the hands of consumers, the real-world testing, and that's what matters. So, yeah, if you're going to be an early adopter, you're going to be one of the first to get this. It has its pros and its cons. You're going to have to get used to maybe a few quirks here and there.
Are any of these cars going to be affordable for the average working Jane or Jack?
Sure. Well, I guess it depends how much a Jane or Jack gets paid.
Not that much these days.
I guess. Well, the Nissan Leaf, you can rent that for, I believe it's like 200, I'm not rented, lease it for $299 a month. Is that the lease rate? Which is, the car itself is like in the mid-20s, and then you have, and that's after the $7,500 federal tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very comparable to just like a normal sedan. I think, and Jim, your guest after me will know these numbers better than I do, but I believe the average price of the car in the United States is about $40,000. And that's like the most commonly purchased car in that price range. So if we're looking at even the Nissan Leaf at about 25, the Volt is a little bit more, but it's still, you know, around the $40,000 the Volt is.
I'm sorry, what's $40,000? What costs $40,000?
The Volt.
Oh, the Volt is $40,000. Now, that seems pretty high to me for a car. It seems like a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it could be it, but if you got to take it into consideration too, the tax credit, and that's big, because with any new technology, especially this electric vehicle technology, it's going to cost a lot for General Motors and the other companies to really produce this. That's why the government needs to step in there and help the American public out.
Right.
So if you're looking at like the Chevy Volt at, let's say, $41,000, you subtract the $7,500 for the federal credit that everybody gets in the United States, and you got to check your local state too, because some states are offering even like a $5,000 state credit.
Oh,
so that price significantly drops down.
Let's go to phone calls. We have tons of them. All I had to do was say electric cars this hour. Yeah. There we go. Phone lines filled. Let's go to John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi. One of the interesting things that I don't think most people hear about is that the electric cars, I think the Chevy Volt would be a good example. It has a 16-kilowatt-hour battery, and kilowatt-hour just means a kilowatt running for an hour. And I think when it starts recharging, it's about half empty, so it uses up about 8 kilowatt-hours for 40 miles. And a kilowatt hour is an amount of energy that you pay for on your electric bill. And in Wisconsin, it's about 10 cents. So 8 kilowatt hours is about 80 cents. So you get about 80 cents for 40 miles. And if you think of that as a gallon of gas, 40 miles, it's 80 cents instead of, what, 285? So it's a dramatic difference.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, my question was about two companies that I was curious about that I don't know if they're for real or not. One of them, Warren Buffett, put like $250 million into, and it's called BYD. And supposedly they've had a plug-in hybrid on the market in China for a year now. And then the other company was a company that worked in a technology called ultracapacitors. And ultracapacitors are a type of technology that has better performance than batteries for the electric car application if they can get them to store enough energy. That company was EE Store, and I was wondering if your guest was familiar with BYD or EE Store and what they're bringing to markets.
Sure, I'm extremely familiar with both of them. Yeah, Warren Buffett, I think he put $10 billion in something crazy amount like that. He bought 10% of the company of BYD. They have started marketing the electric car in China. It's not doing very well, and most likely it's because of the culture, the environment. It's a little bit different. They're talking about bringing that over in 2011, and that date keeps on getting pushed back. I think it's like 2012 now. So I wouldn't hold your breath for the BYD. It's also going to be one of the first Chinese automobiles around here, so there could be some questions on that. E-Store, the capacitor, what you're talking about is basically, yeah, a revolutionary technology that has been in development for roughly about 10 years. And let's just say that there's a lot of question marks about that company, how serious they are, and if we're actually going to see a product. People have been waiting for a long time. They've missed a lot of deadlines, and they make a lot of promises, and they don't deliver. But you never know. Keep your hopes up.
What about these smart cars? I've seen a few of them now on the roads just in the last few months. Are those less expensive? And they obviously look like they're city cars.
Yeah, the smart cars aren't electric cars. I mean, they do have a smart version. I'm sorry, an electric version. It's called the Smart EV. But not for sale here in the United States. The only ones that are here that are electric are actually just conversions or custom conversion jobs.
Oh.
The smart cars or any kind of those small type of city cars, yeah, I mean, they're smaller European version that they're trying to see if they catch on over here, and they're really not catching on too well.
Mm-hmm. So they're not electric?
No. Okay. For the most part, they're not electric.
Yeah. Let's go next to Rick on the road. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
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 Go ahead.
Oh, I have a question. My thoughts about the electric car is that the real driver here is environmental. And I guess my question is, do people really realize where the electricity is coming from? In most cases across the United States, it's coming from coal-fired plants, which is about as dirty as you can get. From an electrical perspective, or from a power generation perspective. And I guess my corollary question is, the electric cars that I've seen when I've traveled to Europe, which is where I've seen most of them, are extremely small, and I would feel very uncomfortable putting my family into a vehicle like that. I can't even imagine the outcome of a Cadillac Escalade in an electric car. I know who's going to live in that collision.
I don't even think you could fit your family in one of those cars. The European cars are small. Well, yeah, I could certainly address both those questions. First of all, in terms of the grid, you make a good point, and many people are concerned about that. Me personally, I don't see the electric vehicle as this big environment saver, and I don't think it will be in terms of, where the energy is coming from. It's coming from a mixture of the different, like the coal, the nuclear, the windmill, and some other green technologies. Right now in the United States, about 51% of all energy does come from coal. Like in North Dakota, I think it's like 100% is coal, whereas in California, it's a lot less. So if for the most part, even if you're using 100% coal and you're charging from the grid, it's still a lot more efficient or better for the environment. There have been plenty of studies on that take you through step by step and show you how it is better for the environment. But for me, once again, that's not a big factor because I don't think it's going to, it's not going to, like, if you're down with global warming and you think that's, it's as bad as it's made out to be, it's not going to make a huge difference. It's moving to electric cars. It's going to take at least like 40 or 50 years if we were to all start moving to electric cars right now and they were start selling electric cars. It takes a long time to get those motorized cars off the road. So it's not the ideal environmental solution. So I don't think anybody should be sold on that idea. However, having to say that too, if you live in a place where there's smog all over the place, like Los Angeles, you got to realize with electric car, that's going to go away. And a lot of people have, there's cancers and asthma and other respiratory related diseases because of the smog. And that's where you see the immediate benefit. So, I mean, that's definitely a big plus. In terms of the European cars, it's not the electric cars you're seeing. It's the European cars you're seeing. If you go to Europe, I've been to Europe plenty of times as well, and the cars are tiny. And yes, I'd put in my family in there, I'd feel quite afraid as well. But when electric cars come here to the States, they're going to be made for Americans. Americans are used to the larger cars. So that's what we're seeing with the, I mean, the Volt isn't a huge car, but it's, the Nissan Leaf, it's a 5-seater. The Volt is a 4-seater. They're standard size cars that our Americans are used to, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Bo Bennett, our guest, the first half hour of the program, creator and host of the EV Cast, a biweekly internet based talk show on electric vehicles. It is at evcast.com. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email talk at WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin. And we go to Sandy from Lake Villa, Illinois. Hi, Sandy.
Oh, my goodness. I thought you cut me off. Okay. Hi. I was going to ask, if a person can go 100 miles per trip per charge, and they go 40 miles to work and 40 miles back, and they're in rush hour traffic in Chicago or somewhere, averaging 11 miles per hour, wouldn't that affect them getting home, they're getting home?
That is the wonderful thing about electric cars. When you're stuck in traffic and you're going only 11 miles per hour, you're actually going to increase that distance that your car gets, because the ideal speed to get the most range out of the battery is about 25, maybe 30 miles per hour. So if you go slower than that, you're going to do pretty well. The faster you go, the shorter range you have. And also, when you're in traffic, you're not wasting gas, let's say, because if your car is not running, the accelerator is not being pushed, you're not wasting any battery. So you're doing pretty well. The only caveat to that is if you are like in the Chicago winter or the dead of the summer and you have the heat on full or the air conditioner on full, then yes, that's using your battery and that's going to take up some of the energy as well. But a good point to make is that just because these car companies say 100 miles to the charge, you cannot, I mean, there are factors that will change that 100 miles, depending on, of course, the temperature, what you're running, if you're running the radio, the lights, if you're going uphill, if you're going downhill. I mean, there's so many different things. 100 is meant to be your average. So, but once you have one of these cars and you do your commute, you'll get a good sense of where you need to be. And, of course, that's one of the benefits of the Volt, too.
I'm listening to the radio.
What, Sandy?
I can't turn my radio off because I'm listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Right.
I listen to it all the time, so I have to keep the radio on.
In your car, of course. You got to have that radio on. Thank you, Sandy, very much for the call. How long does it take to charge a vehicle? Is it an overnight process or a couple hours?
Well, it depends on how much juice you're putting into it. If you're doing a triple phase charger, if you're doing a 220, 240 volt, something that you would let's say you plug your dishwasher or washing machine into, that kind of power, it's going to be less time than say your normal 110 outlet that you would that I use to charge my scooter, for example, because it's not that big of a battery, so I could charge my scooter in about like 3 hours. If you do have the Nissan Leaf or the Volt or one of these new cars coming out, and you would want to get a 240-volt outlet in your garage, so you just call up an electrician for that. Hopefully they can put it in. It's not a big problem. And it could take about 4 hours, 5 hours.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's good.
You're never going to really run your battery empty. I mean, you shouldn't be doing that. Most people are going to use it like just a fraction of the available charge they have. So basically, they're going to bring it down to maybe 50%, and then they'll charge the rest.
Right.
And they don't have to wait the full time.
Ben in Oconomowoc, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
This spring, I got to go for a ride in a Tesla Roadster, and I got to say it is an absolutely fantastic car, but it also happens to cost more than my house. So I took the opposite approach. I thought, well, you know, electric cars are actually really simple. And I built my own. I've been driving my own electric car for the last 2 years. I basically bought a used economy car, and I put a used electric forklift motor in it, built the entire car for about $1,300.
Oh, my gosh.
It just plugs into a regular wall outlet, recharges overnight. And we have a club in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Electric Car Club, where my friend's been building our own electric cars. We have AC, DC, pickup trucks. One guy has a plug-in Prius. A couple of us have motorcycles. And it's really not terribly complicated. There's so few moving parts to an electric car. It's actually very simple. If anybody in the greater Milwaukee area is interested, they can find out about us through MilwaukeeMakerspace.org. And the other great thing about electric cars is that you can run them on renewable energy. So with my electric company, I pay an extra $3 per month to get all my energy from renewable sources. So my car literally does run on solar power and hydropower and wind power and all those sorts of things rather than from coal. And that's something that you can't do with a gas car. You know, your gasoline has to come from oil. That's the only source that we have. But for an electric car, you can run it off of a number of different sources that you can make electricity from, including your own home solar panels.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of people do build their own cars, and I got to give them credit for that because maybe it's just me, the guy who never did very well in high school auto shop, but lifting out that motor and the engine and putting the batteries in, getting everything to work right, it's quite a task, so congratulations.
Yeah.
There's one good point that I neglected to make when we were talking about the grid. And if you think about, like, how are we going to get away from all these coal-fired plants, or if you think about what the grid consists of now and all the cars that are on the road that are using gasoline, it's very difficult to take all these cars off the road. It's much easier to clean up the grid by moving to electric cars and then slowly taking these coal-fired grids and moving them over to, some kind of natural energy. That seems like a much better way than car by car.
And I know the current issue of E! Magazine has a piece, actually, Building the Future in Your Garage with the Right Tools, Any Car Can Go Electric. Thanks very much for the call. Bo, thank you so much for being with us. Your website is evcast.com, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, all right. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bo Bennett, the creator and the host of the EV Cast. We are continuing our conversation about electric cars, and our guest, the last part of the program, is joining us by phone from Iceland. He is the author of the piece, the front page magazine cover piece in E! Magazine, titled Charging Ahead, The Electric Car Revolution is Coming, but Not Fast Enough. Jim Matavalli is our guest. Jim has been with us many times before. He is he blogs for the New York Times, Mother Nature Network, BNET, and the Daily Green. He's a regular contributor to the New York Times automobiles section and has a weekly syndicated Wheels column. He writes Green Living for the Environmental Defense Newsletter, has contributed to Men's Journal, Popular Mechanics, The Nation, The Boston Globe, Philadelphia Review, Salon, and the list goes on. He's written a number of books and spent 14 years as the editor of E! The Environmental Magazine, a national bi-monthly, where he now contributes as a senior writer. He's at a conference on electric cars and running off an electric grid, which is taking place in Iceland, where this is all somewhat standard fare. And we'll find out why from him momentarily. We'll continue taking phone calls, so your calls are still welcome. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Hello, Jim. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be on.
Wow, you sound like you're down the street from me, and I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody who's joined us by phone from Iceland. Yeah. So what's the conference you're going to? What is it?
It's called Driving Sustainability 2010. It's an annual conference they have here. And they bring in people from all over the world, but Iceland itself is trying to become the first country to have a electric transportation infrastructure.
Hmm. Why?
Well, it makes a lot of sense here. The country is only 300,000 people. 200,000 of them are in the capital city of Reykjavik. And they have very cheap and abundant zero-emission electricity from the geothermal and the hydropower. So it's a total no-brainer for them to have electric cars here.
Oh. And are there a lot of electric cars there now, Jim?
No. There's probably 10 of them.
Oh, my goodness. What's the problem?
Well, one thing, the car market here is completely shot since the Icelandic financial crisis. The market is down like 80 to 90%.
Oh.
I never heard of that big of a crash. But also, there are very few electric cars on the market right now. The big seller is the Tesla Roadster, and they've only sold 1,300 of those. It's all happening at the end of this year and early next year that we're going to see the big volumes of electric cars. Of course, volume is kind of relative in this sense.
Yeah, and when you say big volumes, what are you talking?
Well, like selling 20,000 of them would be a pretty big volume for any car maker in the first year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the programs are fairly modest in scope, at least initially. So we have all these cars like the Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Volt and the Kota sedan and the Fisker Karma. Some of your listeners may have heard of these things, but they're all coming out on the market by the latest, the middle of next year.
And who will buy them, Jim? Who's the market?
Early market is what we call early adopters. And these are people who are real tech savvy. They're also very green, and they will buy a green vehicle, and they'll take a plunge into something they really don't know a whole lot about, because these vehicles are a complete unknown in the marketplace, really. And there haven't really been electric cars that sold in any volume since about 1920. So it's a real stab in the dark. It's very hard to say how many early adopters are out there, what the size of the market may be. Maybe there's, in the first year there's only going to be 50,000 cars on the market, but it'll quickly ramp up from there.
Well, the E! Magazine cover story, the electric car revolution is the word that's used, is coming. So you anticipate many, many, many more. When?
Well, I think it's going to be a straight ramp up, so that 2010 we might have 50,000, maybe the volumes could double every year in the next few years. But that's, you know, I'm just guessing at that. I also would say that certain markets are going to be much more lucrative for EVs than others. But California, for instance, will be the biggest market initially. That's ground zero for EVs for a number of reasons. And these include the fact that California is subsidizing electric cars, like $5,000 cash rebates. You'd be able to buy in California, because there's also a federal tax credit, you'll be able to buy a Chevy Leaf that would normally sell for about $32,000. It's going to be $20,000 there.
Mm.
So that's a huge thing. Also, there's a lot of early adopters in California. There's a lot of Hollywood stars that drive these cars and are going to be driving the new ones. The climate is really good for EVs. And, all that comes together to create, I think, the strongest market in the U.S. The size of it is still pretty unclear. Also, some EVs will be sold only in California.
Oh, that's interesting. How do they drive? Do you notice a significant difference?
Oh, yeah. They're a lot of fun to drive, and mainly because electric cars have full torque at zero RPM. In other words, the power is like instant on. So as soon as you try, they virtually leap off the line, and they're almost all very fun to drive. You'd have to deliberately dial it all down to make it sort of stodgy and Ralph Nader-like. For the most part, these are, you know, I've driven all of them, the Chevy Volt, the Nissan Leaf, the Tesla, and they are all quite amusing to drive, I'd have to say.
Uh-huh. They're quiet, aren't they?
They're so quiet that it's actually an issue, and the issue is, will pedestrians and blind people be able to know they're there? So a number of EVs are actually coming out with custom-made sounds that were generated by the car, some of them actually aping the sound of an internal combustion engine.
Hmm.
And though that will be until the car reaches about 20 miles an hour, at which point there's a lot of wind noise and other stuff, so you'd know it was there.
Mm-hmm.
But at very low speeds, there's very little to give them away.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many people who would like to speak with you. Jack is our first caller for you from Beloit. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about the noise there. Two questions. I live in a rural area, and I drive a lot, but I'm also not the richest person in the world, so I often keep my cars for like 10 years. First of all, is the electric car, are the battery packs going to last for normal use under 10 years? And if, at that point, are the batteries going to be good enough that somebody's going to want to buy the car? And my second question is, in rural environments where you're driving through puddles and dirt and dust and everything like that and bumps and so forth, is the insulation on the electrical system going to hold up so it's going to be still safe after that length of time?
Okay, those are very good questions and phrased in a way I haven't heard before. But I think generally you needn't worry about the conditions under which you're going to be driving, because EVs have been tested extensively under various conditions, especially very hot and very cold weather. I've actually seen the Chevy Volt being tested in Yuma, Arizona, when it gets to be like 110 in the shade. And the battery pack's going to make it through that. They also test it in the Arctic, you know, to see if it'll go through very, very cold temperatures. And I've actually been in fuel cell cars where they couldn't get wet, but that is not the case here. And in terms of how long the batteries will last, a number of them, including the Nissan Leaf, the battery is guaranteed for 10 years.
Hmm.
And I think it's 100,000 miles or 10 years. I can't remember the specifics. The Chevy Volt also has a long battery warranty. And the only way we can really look at examples of this is to look at some of the EVs that have been on the road for a long time. And as an example, Tom Hanks and Ed Begley Jr. both have the Toyota RAV4 that was made around 2000, electric version of the RAV4. And both of those cars are still on the road with virtually no maintenance being done to them. And I think Hanks's car has about 50,000 miles, and Begley's car has about 80,000, and neither of them has really caused their owners any trouble.
Hmm. So are you thinking of getting one, Jack?
Considering it, but, you know, like I said, I also have to think about resale at the other end, too.
Right.
It's hard to guarantee that would be there, but I think it will. The EVs, the few that are on the road now, I think could be sold for pretty much what they were initially paid for them.
Hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack, so much for the call. More phone calls in a moment. We actually, for the first time this hour, have a couple lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about electric cars, and our guest wrote the cover story, Charging Ahead, the Electric Car Revolution is Coming. It's the current issue of E, the Environmental Magazine. And our guest is joining us by phone from Iceland, where there is a major conference on this issue. Jim Matavalli is our guest. He is editor, well, he spent 14 years as editor of E, the Environmental Magazine. He now contributes as a senior writer. Did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to more phone calls. Jeff in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
There's been some development in solar rechargeability of electric cars, the batteries of electric cars, and I'm just wondering what the status of that might be.
I think that's a very good question, and what we're seeing is the development of individual charging stations that are also solar stations. There's a company in California that builds these things called, I think they're called EV trees, and they create little forests. And each
what
of the
about
trees
on
in the forest.
Rechargeability?
Yeah, well, the tree is really an EV charging station, and it gets some of its power from a solar panel.
Oh.
And what you can do with these is the solar panel also doubles as a sort of carport. So you end up getting shelter from the elements as well as solar charging. And the solar can either go directly into the grid and offset the cost of the charge, or it can go to directly charge the car. But most of these stations are still going to be connected to the grid.
I was wondering about onboard, the actual car itself, in the Sun Belt especially.
Oh, well, there is some developments of that. I can name two cars that have solar panels incorporated, and these are the Toyota Prius. It's an option on the Prius. And the forthcoming Fisker Karma is going to have a solar panel. The thing is, the size of the solar panel on a car is so small that basically what you're going to do is maybe provide a little cooling for the interior. So that's what they tend to do with solar panels on cars. They pre-cool the interior. So if you have a car that would ordinarily get very hot if you were in Arizona or somewhere, when you get into the car, it's going to be cooled because it uses the power from the solar panel to drive a little fan and pre-cool the interior. That's basically what they've been doing with solar panels on cars.
Thanks very much for the call. Email from Heather, who graduated a master's degree from the School for Renewable Energy Science in Iceland. It was a great program to learn about renewable energy, but Iceland has such a different situation. The fact that it has extra clean electricity, the rest of the world is still working on this. Is the electric car revolution putting the chicken before the egg, or should the focus be put more on integrating renewable energy so we are not powering our cars on coal, for example?
Yes. Well, they need to proceed in concert. They need to be developed at the same time. The unique situation of Iceland is that it actually has excess energy capacity. Because of its huge geothermal abundance, it could actually produce far more electricity practically free than can possibly be used by the 300,000 people in Iceland. So what happened is they developed this aluminum smelting business featuring some big American players like Alcoa with a very electricity-dependent business to use the excess electricity generation. It would be a lot better if they got rid of the whole aluminum smelting business and did something more positive with the renewable energy generation. If you could export electricity, that would be the ideal way to go. And there could be various ways of doing it. You could export hydrogen, as an example. But since there's no easy way to put electricity in a barge and ship it somewhere.
Right.
It's one of the big problems we have, actually. It's kind of use it or lose it. So adding electric cars to the grid in Iceland would make huge sense because electricity is practically free there, and it's zero emission.
Yeah. Stanley is next. Hi, Stanley.
Yeah, hello. Earlier you had a caller come up extolling the inexpense of using electricity to run that 40-mile example, and I think his calculations had it at 40 cents compared to $2 or $3 for a gallon of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Yet nowhere in his calculation were the tax that is embedded in that gallon of gasoline that is used to pave the roads, to build the roads, to support the stop signs. How do we envision that we are going to support our roadway infrastructure, which electric cars need just as badly as gasoline-powered cars need, if we no longer have that tax structure?
That's a very good question, too. And it had occurred to me along the way that this is an issue. There's a number of things, and we have 160,000 gas stations. We have a huge network of people employed by gas stations and service centers. Electric cars don't need to be serviced very much, so they don't generate a whole lot of service station business. They don't have a lot of replaceable parts, so the parts business is also threatened. But yes, it is indeed an issue. We'd have to figure out some way of replacing the highway trust fund that is used to keep our highways. In fact, I think one of the problems is we spend too much of our money on highways, and we don't use enough of the money generated on highways to help support public transit and other options.
Here's just off electric cars for a moment. A couple people have written in variations on this. This is from Carson in Lake Geneva. I can't help feeling that fully electric, quasi-electric hybrid vehicles utilize a dead-end technology that there are a lot of problems with it. Cost to change, energy to charge, the cost of the batteries, recycling the batteries. Why doesn't anyone talk about hydrogen vehicles? Hydrogen-powered vehicles seem like the ideal solution.
That's a very good question. And it turns out that I'm about to get a test hydrogen vehicle.
Really?
At home, yes.
Oh.
It's a Toyota Highlander hydrogen vehicle, and I'm going to have access to it because an entrepreneur, this guy who made millions selling reclaimed flooring, in a sort of warehouse flooring operation, has announced, a fellow by the name of Tom Sullivan, announced that he's going to create a hydrogen highway between Maine and Florida along the East Coast.
Huh.
And if you consider the range of a hydrogen car, which is much greater than an EV, It's maybe 300 miles on a tank of hydrogen. So if you put like 14 stations along the eastern seaboard, you can pretty much create a hydrogen highway. That's his plan. He's put in the first of the stations at Proton Energy in Connecticut, and it happens to be near where I live, and that makes me eligible to actually test a hydrogen-powered car. So this is Toyota's entry. It's called FCHV.ADV, I think is the name for it. But it's a variation on the Highlander. Gets about 300 miles on a tank of hydrogen.
Ooh.
And essentially, hydrogen vehicles are electric vehicles. They run on electric motors and everything. The difference is that instead of batteries, as in the EV, you have a tank of hydrogen and the fuel cell, which converts hydrogen into electricity and water. So the problem, the only issue is the cars are expensive to make, and we have very few hydrogen stations right now. There's probably 60 in the U.S. So what we need are hydrogen highways like this one the guy's building. Some of you may have heard that Arnold Schwarzenegger in California promised to build a hydrogen highway in California, but that sort of fell victim of budget cuts and didn't get very far.
Oh, this is fascinating. You'll have to let us know how it is when you get home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like driving $1 million vehicle.
Whoa, that's a little scary.
Well, the early ones cost that. Probably not this one. I don't know.
Woo. Wow. Stanley, thanks for the call. Daryl from Couderay. Hi.
Good morning, and thanks for the program. I had a couple of comments and a question. I believe your earlier guest was discussing the EV1 produced by GM for the state sales in California. And for that, U.S. taxpayers gave GM a $1 billion grant, which did not have to be repaid. But they got to keep the science and technology after they destroyed all but two of the cars at a Burbank facility. No one could buy any of these cars, yet taxpayers paid for that technology. The reason they got rid of them was because it was projected leasers would have to replace the battery pack every 2 years. None of the battery packs ever went bad, so GM saw this as a no-profit product. Is this true?
I think replacing the batteries every 2 years sounds absurd to me. They never would have needed replacing that quickly. The batteries in those cars were not nearly as sophisticated as those in EVs today. The early EV1s had lead-acid batteries, which are the same ones in an EV in 1910, and really didn't have a whole lot more range either. But during the EV1's lifetime, the nickel metal hydride battery pack for the electric car was invented, and the last of the EV1s got nickel metal hydride, which is a giant leap. That's the battery that's seen in most hybrids today, including the Prius. But the next generation after nickel metal hydride is lithium ion, and that's another big leap forward. And certainly these battery packs are projected to last quite a long time. Though probably the reason they crushed those EVs did have something to do with liability if the battery packs failed. It definitely was an insurance liability question.
Here's somebody who's obviously thinking about winter, Mike in Oshkosh. Can you please discuss how are we going to keep the windows defrosted on 40-mile one-way commutes?
Well, electric vehicles have heaters and defrosters. That's not really an issue. That what is an issue is that in an EV, you do not have an internal combustion engine that drives an alternator, which is what generates electricity for your car. You never run out of electricity in your regular car as long as the engine's running, because the belt from the engine drives a little alternator or generator, and that provides electricity as long as the car is running. In an EV, anytime you use any accessory like the defroster, the heater, the radio, that directly impacts battery life, because there's only one source of power in an EV, and that is the battery system.
Mm-hmm.
So when in the winter you drive an EV, your battery pack is not going to last as long.
I see.
Your range is lower because the heater uses a fair amount of electricity. In fact, in tests of the Mini-E, which was the BMW electric car, They made 600 of those, I think about 300 of them in the U.S. Those cars had like 65% of their battery life in the winter. Oh. You really saw a significant drop. There's probably two reasons for that. One, the fact that people were using heaters, and the other is that the battery life is lower in cold weather.
And just in 5 seconds or so, is Iceland lovely?
Iceland is very lovely. It's only about 45 degrees here. It's kind of cold, but it's very close. People who have never been there should look on a map and see how far away it is and consider it for their next vacation, because it's it's one of the nearest places you can get to. It's very exotic.
I would imagine. Thanks so much for being with us, Jim.
The word geyser was invented here.
Oh, all right. Thanks for being with us. Jim Matavalli, freelance journalist. He is the author of the cover story piece, The Electric Car Revolution is Coming, Charging Ahead. Thanks, Chrissy Pease, for production.